How could you become a global citizen? Well, let's find out. I'm Garland McWaters, and this is the Spirit of Leading podcast. My guest on this installment of the Spirit of Leading podcast is Akash Patel. He's the founder and executive director of World Experiences Foundation. Akash is also a recent honoree in the Next Gen Under 30 Oklahoma Recognition Program and received its Spirit of Oklahoma Award given to honorees who demonstrate exceptional leadership qualities in their service. Akash, thank you so much for finding time to tell us all about your work and to share your experience with us today.
Thank you, Garland, for this incredible opportunity, and thank you for being here in Oklahoma City to record this morning.
I might tell our listeners that we are here in the boardroom of the Republic Bank in South Oklahoma City, and we'll talk a little bit later about why they're important to you.
Yes.
But we do appreciate their hospitality today and giving us a place in a few minutes to be able to do this. But what's interesting to me is how you came about being in Oklahoma.
I get asked that a lot. Where I come from in India, you know, you could be four things. You could be an engineer, a doctor, a lawyer, or a disgrace to the family. So my parents wanted me and my twin brother to pursue a career in engineering. So we moved to the state of Iowa to study nuclear engineering and general engineering students. And I had an exciting opportunity to travel to India with the chair of the American Nuclear Society, Dr. Carolyn Heising, where I thought I had this passion for STEM. And when I returned from that trip, while I do have the passion for STEM, I knew for sure that I did not have a calling for machines. And that's when I realized that I need to quit this and find something else that I'm really passionate about, that really makes me want to wake up every morning and be like, yes, I want to do this the next morning. Against my parents' will, my brother and I moved to the state of Oklahoma, where we had an uncle. And we decided to go to Oklahoma City Community College because we were last and we didn't know what we wanted to do with our lives. So I pursued my associates in liberal studies there. And while I pursued my associates and while I was lost here in Oklahoma, I found my passion for teaching, for inspiring young people and for showing them the world around them, for showing them the opportunities that exist outside their classrooms. So I pursued my bachelor's in University of Science and Arts of Oklahoma in Chickasha. And a very interesting experience, a place where the World Experiences Foundation was born, because I had never in my life lived in a small community mm-hmm. like Chickasha. So it was beautiful to learn from my colleagues that were mostly from out in the country that had farms and ranches. It was beautiful to go out to rodeos and wear my cowboy boots and cowboy hat where everybody would think I was a Mexican cowboy. And it was beautiful to share my experiences and student teach in small rural communities like Ninaka and Rush Springs. While I was doing that, I got to meet students that had never seen someone like me, that had never seen somebody who had traveled to over 30 countries and that would use these travel experiences in the classroom to teach them about the world, to take them to different places around the globe. So while I was teaching them, I had realized that not only did I have stereotypes about Oklahomans, for example, when I first came to Oklahoma, mm-hmm. I looked outside the Will Rogers Airport and I was like, where are the cowboys and where are the
right.
tapies?
Everyone asked that.
So the kids had similar stereotypes. You know, the kids, which is innocent, we all have stereotypes, but we can dispel these stereotypes using education and dialogue.
Right.
So that's what I saw in Oklahoma and the rural communities, and that's when I realized I have a gift to share the world with the children, and together we can educate them not only about the world, but at the same time help them dispel stereotypes.
Right.
So I brought in my friends from all around the globe on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And because we are blessed with technology in
right.
America,
yes.
I got these people to Skype and Google Hangout with our children in rural Oklahoma. So my children from rural Oklahoma and then my children from the school that I first taught in Oklahoma City had traveled to over 100 countries virtually live all around the globe.
Right.
They traveled with a scientist in Antarctica who was taking selfies with penguins, and kids were overjoyed to see the little penguins walking around in Antarctica without even having to leave their rooms. or they got to travel and see children at a school in India and mystery hang out with them. Because many a times when we would hang out with these people from all around the globe, I would give my students atlases. And students love competition. They love to compete. So they would want to ask them questions to figure out what country they were from and ultimately engage in a dialogue that would teach them about the great things we have in America while at the same time learning about India or the Philippines or Ghana or Swaziland or Antarctica. People ask me all the time, Mr. Patel, why do we need this in Oklahoma? Now, there's two beautiful reasons why we need it. One, multiculturalism.
Right.
Multiculturalism because it's good for America. It teaches American people to be grateful for the many freedoms they have in America. You see this from time to time. You go into schools, children are wasting their meals on a daily basis. Thousands of tons of food being thrown in the trash can. And I faced a similar problem. Even though I was teaching at Title I schools, children had everything. They had meals paid for. They had their supplies taken care of by churches. But children didn't lack one thing. Some of the children lacked being grateful for what they had in America. And I was like, what can I do to teach them to be grateful? So when we connected them with people from all around the globe where they had little, children learned to empathize with the problems of people around the globe.
And that's something you don't get a chance to experience firsthand, because we are so isolated in the United States. You have an international perspective. You've been to all these countries. You've seen so many different things. What was your impression of American children who didn't have that experience, and how they're different maybe from some of the other international experiences you had?
Oh, absolutely. That's another great question. You know, and this is the very basis why I started the foundation, is I saw, not only did I have stereotypes, as I mentioned, you know, none of us are free of stereotypes. We all have stereotypes. But I also realized that children in Oklahoma had stereotypes,
right.
A, because they're probably never traveled outside the United States, or their knowledge of the world was limited, which is fine. But we as educators have an incredible opportunity and a power to bring the world to their classrooms in standards-based settings and get them excited about something that lies outside their classrooms. When I taught in inner city schools, I saw children that came from very torn backgrounds, like they were gang members or they were juvenile delinquents and they already had a probation officer in middle mm-hmm. school, or that these children lacked a father figure in their families. So when I connected them with people and role models from all around the globe that came and spoke to them from different countries, children saw role models in them. Children saw that someday they too could go to Swaziland, or someday they too could go to Antarctica and study penguins, or they too could go and travel to India and see the Taj Mahal, or they could go to the Yellowstone National Park, where we had rangers walking them around and taking them on a tour of the Yellowstone National Park.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing that I noticed was, with our programs, we saw a sudden decline in classroom misbehavior because children had now started empathizing with the problems of people across the globe. And I had seen a sudden rise in empathy and compassion in the children.
That's fascinating. I'm also fascinated by how you came by all of these other experiences that you could bring into the classroom. How did you reach out to all of these other places? Did you already have a network of people in place, or did you find people to ask to help, or how did you get so many different people to expose themselves to the classrooms here in the United States through the technology?
Well, that's a wonderful question. I went to an international Catholic school, and we were very blessed and fortunate that after our early years of life, when my parents had a great education and they had the opportunity to travel around the globe. So we had already traveled to over 20 countries and had a network of people in these 20 countries before we came to the United States. And while I was in college, I had great opportunities to travel around the globe and spend some time volunteering, interning with different institutions around the globe where I built my networks. And that's when I realized, what if I bring these people via Skype and Google Hangout?
Right.
We have plenty of technology in the United States. Nobody is using it in America. Why don't I start it with my own classrooms? And when I saw what I could accomplish in one classroom, I realized this has the potential to transform the classroom environment of children from across the state of Oklahoma. So after my first year of teaching at Hayes Elementary School, not too far away from this bank right here on the south side of Oklahoma City, I decided to quit teaching, to start this nonprofit to train teachers from the Panhandle to Durant, Oklahoma, in Skype and Google Hangout in the classroom. Now we have a database of over 1,000 people divided according to continents and regions from all around the globe. According to expertise, the teachers can access at no cost and connect their classrooms virtually with people around the globe. And now we are working in Texas. We're working in Arkansas. So I believe that this has the potential to transform the classroom climate around the United States, while at the same time, you know, improving and educating international people about the great things we enjoy right here in the United States.
Right.
Share a quick story of how children from a Title I school, you know, many a times these children feel like they can't make a difference in someone's
right.
life because they come from poor backgrounds.
And the Title I school are schools that have such a poverty level where children receive subsidized meals and things of that nature.
Absolutely, so, or 99
these are,
or 100%,
poorer families,
100% poor, free and reduced meals.
Right. These are not advantaged to children at all.
Absolutely, so. They are not advantaged. And one incident was when I connected them virtually with the CEO of Community Recycling in Washington. This gentleman recycles stuff in the United States and sends some of it to impoverished communities around the globe. So when children talked to him on Google Hangout, they were like, wow, you do some cool stuff, but what can I do to help you? That was a powerful question. So the CEO of Community Recycling, he sent us a box with shipping paid for. And he said, throw all your old clothes and shoes that you no longer use into this box. When we shipped it back to him, a month later, he Google hung out with us one more time. And he's like, hey, Bella, look at your shoes. They're going to the Philippines. Or, hey, Alexis, look at your shirt. I'm sending them to the school in Ghana. So for the first time, children at this Title I school had realized and learned a very powerful lesson in giving, that you don't have to be rich to make a difference in someone's life, that we all can make a difference and we all can make an impact on someone's life, regardless of what we have and what resources we have. So, you know, my teaching has not just improved student scores, but it has also nurtured active global citizens, active American global citizens who not only care for fellow Americans right here at home, but also believe in sharing their great freedoms and the great opportunities they have in America with people worldwide.
So it's fascinating that the concept of global citizens really is you can be a global citizen from wherever you are.
From wherever you are, absolutely. And you can connect them as easy as making a phone call, as easy as adding Garland on my phone and making a phone call. You could simply add Garland's Google Hangout account or Skype and make a phone call. Now, all our database is background checked. So these are individuals that are professionals. They're engineers, doctors, teachers. They are curators at museums around the globe. So, you know, in Oklahoma, especially because of our budget crisis, teachers come to me all the time, Mr. Patel, we don't have resources to take our students on field trips. So we started a virtual field trip program where we have connected local fire departments to the Yellowstone National Park or the Taj Mahal, where somebody will walk around and show them around the Taj Mahal. So we can no longer complain that we don't have resources to take our students on field trips. We can take them virtually, live, and for free.
Well, that's the marvelous ability of our interconnectivity and our technology today around the world, is you can't use the excuse that you can't get there from here.
Absolutely.
So you can get there one way or another, and we do that anyway. Sometimes we just don't realize how pervasive and how widespread that technology actually is. We're getting information from all over the world anyway.
You know, that's just one of our programs, the Global Connect program. Based on that program, we started 5 other programs. So we started the Global Ambassadors Leadership Institute, which we host right here in this conference room in Oklahoma City at Republic Bank and Trust. And we select students from across the state of Oklahoma, from rural and inner city communities that have never had this opportunity, but they have this deep passion to change the world. And they have this passion to make a difference around the globe. So we bring them and we select about 15 to 20 and we give them a scholarship for a semester-long leadership fellowship, and we connect them with ambassadors, with diplomats, with State Department officials who come right into this conference room, virtually or in person, teaching them about different topics as they relate to global citizenship and global leadership. At the same time, over the semester, students are supposed to create a project locally that has global implications. We've had high school students that developed apps to help newcomer immigrants into the United States assimilate in our American way of life, which is they created an app that would help them find the Social Security office, that would help them find local resources, the library, other resources that immigrants may need to navigate the system. We've had students from Oklahoma City that created viral pages that teach Oklahomans about international events that they may not be aware of. There are hundreds of international events that go around in Oklahoma that are available at no cost. And some of our global ambassadors realize that a lot of people tend not to go to these places because they think that there's a cost associated to them or there's a lack of information about these events. So they created these pages simply to educate Oklahomans about the different things that lie here. Or we've had students that created resources and donations that they went on a donation drive right here in Oklahoma City to provide it to refugees in Africa or refugees in Syria. So they've created local drives in Oklahoma that have created a global impact through some of these projects. And it was all possible because of the connections they were able to make right here at the Global Ambassadors Leadership Institute. And then we have a professional development program that trains teachers to teach global citizenship in the classrooms. So our trainers go in and teach teachers how to teach in a global anti-bias multicultural setting in their classroom while at the same time teaching their curriculum, which is math, science, English, language arts, whatever they're teaching. So our professional development program is very popular among teachers because teachers want to know how they could open their classrooms to the world, to especially over 150 countries at no cost. And all of this is possible because of corporate sponsors like Republic Bank and Trust, like the Chickasaw Nation, like Oklahoma City Thunder, or like the University of Oklahoma, and our other corporate sponsors and partners that have supported our foundation. And that's the only reason how we can offer these programs at no cost to educators from across the
state. But it takes everyone doing that, and there are resources, and there are people who have the ability to help out that way. And when they see a direct connection and a benefit, they're certainly willing to do that, aren't they?
Absolutely. And I have seen that in people in Oklahoma. They have been very kind, generous to our foundation, and we have grown exponentially in just a matter of 4 years of our founding. So now we are currently serving schools in Arkansas. We are serving schools in Texas. And soon we may be able to serve schools from across the United States.
Right. How does a person become a part of your network?
Well, we have several ways to get involved. One is by volunteering in our database, which is an incredible way to make a personal contact. Anybody can volunteer. You don't have to have traveled to 50 countries to be able to share your expertise with students. You could be a local geologist. You could be a teacher. We can put you and sign you up in our network where you could talk and share your experiences with children in Australia or children in Ghana, children in India. We have a wide network, and all of this happens during your free time. So you pick the time, and the teachers will provide you several dates, and you pick the time, and that's when you go and hang out with some of the students, or it could even be hanging out with students right here locally. The other way high school and college students could get involved is through our Global Ambassadors Leadership Institute. This institute is offered biannually, twice a year, two semesters, fall and spring. Anybody who's under 28 years of age, who is still in college or in high school, they are more than welcome to be a part of our Global Ambassadors Leadership Institute. We have another program called the International Service Learning Trips. We take students, professionals, adults on trips to India and Nepal to work with elephants, or we take them to Costa Rica to work with 100,000 sea turtles. So these are trips that are offered. We offer study abroad scholarships to anybody who is willing to go on that trip. So these are trips that we offer annually in summer of each year. So again, the application for these trips is also available at worldexperiencesfoundation.org. And teachers, we've got a multicultural resource center at the foundation where they can check out any multicultural objects, they can check out multicultural lessons, or they can access our database and learn how to connect their classrooms virtually with people around the globe. of our volunteers at the foundation, they are instantly registered into the President's Volunteer Service Program. Our organization's a certifying organization for PVSA. So any hours they earn towards the bronze, the gold, or the Lifetime Achievement Award by the President of the United States. So that's one way to recognize our volunteers, while at the same time we have dinners throughout the year where we recognize the incredible work that our volunteers do, because our foundation exists because of the hard work and passion of our volunteers.
Now, you have been on the road recently, traveling to some of these other countries. Who are some of the people you have met that are now part of your network?
Well, just a month ago, we were recognized with the Daily Point of Light Award and Certificate by President Bush Sr. Points of Light is an organization started by Bush Sr. that recognizes people, local grassroots level organizations or individuals who are making an impact on people in their communities or making an impact on their communities. So we were recognized by Points of Light, so I had the incredible opportunity to network with President Bush Sr. and his son, Neil Bush. I also, 2 weeks ago, had the opportunity to see President Bill Clinton, and President Clinton invited me to Arkansas, to the Clinton Presidential Center, where I had the opportunity to share what we do at the at our World Experiences Foundation. And over the last 2 weeks, again, President Clinton has connected me with several other world leaders. Just like this last past weekend on Saturday, I had the opportunity to meet with Nobel Peace Laureate Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. She's the first democratically elected female president of Liberia. And I had a conversation with her on how we at the World Experiences Foundation could help connect some of her classrooms in Liberia with classrooms in the United States, or partnering classrooms anywhere around the globe. So the last 2 months have been incredible as far as meeting global figures, such as our former presidents of the United States, or the president's foreign heads of states. So I'm very excited and thrilled to see where the foundation goes from now. My vision for the foundation is someday what we did in the state of Oklahoma over the last 4 years can be replicated in all 50 states of the United States.
That would be exciting to be able to spread the influence out that far, and that would go a lot farther to connecting our classrooms and our young people with people around the world on a more intimate basis, rather than just reading something in a book. They actually have sort of face-to-face conversations through Skype and Google Hangout, as you were describing. Now, what age group of children are you working with primarily in the schools?
We work with pre-K through 12. Mm-hmm. So all our lessons are aligned for pre-K through 12. We've also now started serving university classrooms, because we have university professors or community college professors that are teaching units on certain regions, and they want some expertise from some people. We're more than happy to connect community colleges and universities. So this program is available to anybody. Mm-hmm. It could even be available to corporations or to institutions, businesses that may be willing to do trade with Saudi Arabia, or that may be interested in doing trade with India, or they may be interested in doing trade with Germany. And we're more than willing to connect them. And we do professional development for businesses on international trade, mm-hmm. and international etiquette or international norms when it comes to working with certain regions, and how their traditions may be different than American traditions, and how to successfully deal with these people in order to maximize trade opportunities.
Well, it's fascinating how that has grown. I want to go back a little bit to some of your earlier experiences with it. You mentioned you realized that you had some opportunities beyond just teaching in the classroom that was your passion. Do you remember that moment or that time when you began getting that inkling or that notion that maybe there's more here than what I had thought, and I should look into this, or I should try something? Where did that spark
kind of
come from?
That was a great time. It's right after I graduated from USAO in Chickasha, and I joke about this all the time. I was the only brown guy in my graduating class to graduate from the college. It was such a neat experience, what USAO has afforded me. And right after I student taught and finished teaching, I realized that maybe I don't want to teach right away. So I went on a tour of the state of Oklahoma, from northern Oklahoma, all the way up in the panhandle, mm-hmm. down to southern Oklahoma, traveling to over 100 schools, teaching children about my work with elephants. Because I have worked several years with elephants, studying elephant poaching patterns using their DNA mapping of elephants, or making what is called elephant poo-poo paper, paper made out of elephant dung. And one elephant gives you about 200 sheets of paper every day, and it's sold at the Oklahoma City Zoo and the Tulsa Zoo. So kids would get a kick out of this, and I thought I would just go around the state of Oklahoma teaching children about my experiences with elephants, with sea turtles. When I did that, I saw the spark in the eyes of the children. I was like, this is the time maybe I need to start teaching in my own classroom. So I applied for positions. And since I lived in Norman, I applied for positions within the Oklahoma City Metro. And I was like, I want a challenging position, a position in a school where they have unique challenges. So I picked a Title I school in Oklahoma City, Hayes Elementary School. And the first year of my school, I was recognized by the State Department as the January 2015 Educator of the Month, and then later, the 2015 Multicultural Teacher of the Year. So my first year teaching experience had already created, you know, a lot of publicity about what we had done in my classroom, garnered a lot of interest from other teachers, from other school districts about what was happening in my room. And that was the point when I realized, what if I didn't limit this to just one classroom? What if I start a foundation? Let me go ahead and put these ideas on paper. I applied with the IRS. We got approval within a few months, and we were now a registered 501c3 entity. Mm-hmm. And we started serving schools in the Oklahoma City Metro. Slowly, I was invited to speak at conferences from across the state. And then it was so easy for us, once people saw the value and once people saw things that were already done in several classrooms, they were not reluctant in opening their doors to our foundation. And now we serve schools and communities from across the state.
Now, you have several people involved in helping you with your foundation.
Oh, absolutely. We do. So we have a director of operations, Don Bisbee, who has been with the foundation ever since its founding. And I'm very appreciative of Don and his leadership. We've secured many grants thanks to his leadership. And we have a director of outreach who's Guatemalan-American. She is Hilda de Leon Javier. She does our outreach for our foundation. So, and mostly my job is to fundraise, establish new partnerships with schools and communities from across the United States. And we have a strong community of volunteers, not mm-hmm. just in Oklahoma. We have volunteers from all around the globe. As I said, 1,000 volunteers strong that Google Hangout on a daily basis with schools and communities from Oklahoma, Texas, and Arkansas.
Now, how did you come about this group of people who now are with you on your foundation?
These were people that I met through networking events, or these were individuals that I met at other multicultural events or conferences that I spoke to that really saw the spark in my eyes, and they're like, Akash, why don't we start something? And, you know, I shared my ideas with them. And when it was a startup, I just got them on board, and they've always been with me. And now we have grown the foundation together, and we have added on more people, like our board of directors. We have Dean Grillot of the OU College of International Studies, who's very passionate, again, about international cooperation. We have Mary Blankenship Pointer, who is the Vice President of Republic Bank and Trust, also one of our corporate sponsors. We have Jonah Kirshner, who is the Vice President of Chickasaw Nation Industries, and also representative of the Chickasaw Nation, which is a very dear friend and partner of our programs at the World Experiences Foundation. So these are all people who believe in our vision, who believe in a vision of a world free of bigotry and prejudice, and who believe in a world of interconnectedness, and they believe in the unique challenges that we will face in 2030, where our children can no longer speak just one language. Like, you know, I spoke at the European Flip Learning Congress last year, where I saw young children that spoke 4 and 5 languages. We have foreign language instruction in America, but something's going on where children, after taking 5 years of French or German or Spanish, they can't engage in a conversation. So that's another program, that one of the programs that we have started at our foundation, where after school, we go around schools teaching children foreign languages that may maximize economic opportunities for them in the future. Mm-hmm. And I believe that second part, the second pillar of our foundation, multilingualism, is important for national security.
Right.
A nation where people can speak multiple languages is more secure than a nation where people, and we can learn only from our Native American code talkers or from, you know, our army that consistently recruits people internationally because they have foreign language deficiencies.
Right.
So why not teach these languages to our own children and hire right here in the United States? And
that just makes them. That makes too much sense almost to for a lot of people to really grasp a hold of that. Especially when, you know, I grew up in the United States, obviously, and as did most citizens of the United States, and there almost seems to be a myopic kind of sense of it's only about us. And we don't want anybody speaking any other language other than English. And I, for some reason, that just never really made a lot of sense to me. So if you're going to live in the world, why would you want to be able to communicate with the world? This empathy angle is very fascinating to me, because if we're ever going to turn the corner in being more open and inclusive of people from all over the world, you have to have some contact with people from all over the world.
Very nonpartisan. We do not teach partisan lessons in the classroom, but we do connect children with people and places worldwide. So a few weeks ago, I happened to see a report on international news media about the Kiribati Islands. These are tiny atolls in the Pacific that are going underwater, and their president just purchased land in Fiji to relocate their people. Now, I didn't want to teach a lesson about climate change at all, but I wanted to connect my students right here in Oklahoma City with children in Kiribati so they knew what a school day looked like in Kiribati, because they're on tiny atolls where if they got out of their school, they could simply go and jump into the water for their recess. So, and, you know, kids ask them the first question, what do you do for recess? And the kids in Kiribati were like, we just go outside and jump in the water because we're that close to the ocean. But the children then walked these children around and they said, look at my house. It is already underwater. And my mom or my dad said, we are moving to Fiji, which is a neighboring country. And the next day, after each of our Google Hangout and Skype session, we have teachers reflect on what kind of an impact it had on students as a whole. This teacher that we connected to Kiribati sent me a picture of one of her most difficult students. We all have them. We all have those most difficult students. This most difficult student had drawn a picture of his bed where he shared it with another individual, and he said, this could be the climate refugee from Kiribati. Mm. So he wanted to share his bed. So to me, that, you know, that was powerful. The fact that he had empathized to a level where he felt like, wow, what is this kid going to do? This kid needs a place to be, and maybe he can share my bed. I don't have a lot, but maybe I can share my bed with this kid in Kiribati. Now, the lesson was certainly not about whether climate change is real or not, but it was about connecting children from one part of the world with the other and seeing how the differences and similarities, which was an elementary classroom. They were going over compare and contrast. So, but how this compare and contrast lesson between two countries taught a very difficult student to empathize with the problems of people around the world.
And to me, from where I come from professionally and what I try to teach in my work through Empowered to Lead, is that you always have to begin with an understanding and appreciation of each individual life, that everyone has a life. And that everyone's life is as dear and important to them as yours is to you. Mm-hmm. And if you can somehow take your experience with your own life and how precious it is to you and put that into another person, or say another person, you know, even my brothers and sisters and my relatives, they have a life that's their own life, and the people across town have their own life, and people across the world have their own life. And each and every one of those lives is by definition intrinsically valuable and important. And being able to get into that place where you're sort of really in their skin and in their shoes and empathize and kind of at that level, it makes you realize, why would I ever want to hurt anyone? Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't I want to share? Why wouldn't I want to help everyone's life be the best it could be? Because I want mine to be that way.
Yep.
It goes back to that same principle, you know, treat others as you want to be treated yourself. And to really make that real, mm-hmm. people have to realize that other people are having these experiences, that their homes are going underwater, or that they're living in danger, or that resources that are important to them are being taken away illicitly and so forth. And And having that experience of empathy is almost priceless. And especially to young children, that's the way you change the world, is you start changing, you know, the children of the world to have a heart for that kind of empathy, and maybe some of these other things sort of correct over time.
I agree. And, you know, that brings me to a quick brief experience of another Skype conference we hosted right here in Oklahoma City, when a teacher complained that students were making fun of Ebola and Zika virus. So, you know, kids are innocent. They don't know the backgrounds and what people were going through when they had Zika or when they had Ebola. So we connected them with social entrepreneurs in Liberia, and we connected them with a medical doctor in Brazil who spoke to the students about what people had to go through and what some of the people in Liberia had to go through when they felt unwanted, that nobody wanted to touch them in the middle of the streets because they just didn't want to touch them. Even healthcare workers ran away from their duties of treating these people with Ebola. So when kids saw that, you know, they realized that it was not okay to even use that word in a different context at mm-hmm. school, because they learned what it meant for people and how people died in the middle of the streets without getting any care, despite people walking right past them in the streets of Liberia. So kids realized that their lives are as equally important and valuable as our lives in the United States.
Important.
And that life is sacred, and everyone's life is as equally important as our life right here in America.
And if we could get that message across, perhaps we would be able to make some big changes in the way, well, we'd, without being political, we make a lot of changes politically because we're making them at a human level.
Absolutely. And that's what happens. We can all bring that and make that happen when we realize, because this program is allowing children to not just dispel stereotypes, it's allowing children to see that despite our many differences, we are all the same.
All the same.
We all bleed red. We all have the same ambitions, aspirations for our families, for our brothers, for our sisters, for ourselves. We all smile. We all cry at the same things. So a lot of times when people, when we have some authors reading books on both sides from different parts of the world, children laugh at the same thing, mm-hmm. whether it's right here in America or in Australia. Children laugh at the same thing. So children see that, no, we're all the same. And this is a powerful way to break down those differences and help children understand that it's okay to think differently, but at the same time, it's okay to value each other for being and understanding that we're ultimately the same. We're all humans.
Well, I don't want to get away from this interview without asking how this experience has impacted you personally. What have you learned about yourself? And what have you learned about taking an idea and marshaling it into sort of a movement in a way that helps you understand yourself as a leader and your opportunities as a leader?
You should take risks in life. I took a very big risk in my life, especially because my parents were not very happy. Now my parents are so proud of me and what they're doing,
what they
and they're great ambassadors. They're great ambassadors of me and to other Asian American families or to other Indian American children. And they tell parents, allow your child to follow their passions, to follow their instincts and follow what they, because when you're passionate about something and you have this unflagging will to pursue it, anything is possible.
Well, we're certainly blessed to have you here in Oklahoma, and we certainly hope that this is a place that you will be staying and growing your foundation internationally from here, because it's Oklahoma's kind of in the middle of a lot of places. It's an easy place to get to. It's an easy place to live. And certainly you have to speak that the people generally are gracious people, and they're honest and they're loving people that you certainly want to have around you. But Kosh, thanks so much for sharing your experience, and we wish you all the very best, because I'm sure there's many, many more things that can come out of this than what you've already done, and many more opportunities to really impact the world around you from right here in Oklahoma.
Well, thank you, Garland, for this opportunity. And I just want to end this with a note that none of this would have been possible had it not been for Oklahoma or for the United States and for all the freedoms we enjoy here. I always think about how could I have done the same thing in India. It would not have been possible. It takes lots of connections. It takes lots of network and resources to be able to build the same thing in India. So I'm very grateful for what this country has offered me and my family, And I just hope that I can offer the same opportunity to other young people and inspire them on the way to pursue their dreams.
We do want to be reminded that there are so many opportunities there if we allow ourselves to dream them and risk them, and then also share them with so many other people who want to be a part of those kinds of dreams as well. That's the marvelous thing about this, is how we end up with an idea that comes to us, and then as we begin to share with other people, it becomes a passion for them as well and a movement.
It certainly does. It multiplies, and you know, our foundation is a living example of how thousands of volunteers have grown it from one classroom to thousands of classrooms from across the region.
It's truly inspiring and a wonderful story. Well, Akash, thank you so much. We've been talking to Akash Patel, who is the founder and executive director of World Experiences Foundation here in Oklahoma and around the world. Well, that's it for this episode of the Spirit of Leading podcast. Until next time, I encourage you to live each and every day empowered by encouraging the spirit, enlivening the heart, enlightening the mind, and enlarging the expectations of living in yourself and in others. I'm Garland McWaters.